Tuttle, your host of the Worldwide Vegan Summit for Truth and Freedom. You now have the terrific opportunity to learn from the deep experience and inspiring example of Henna Maria. Henna Maria is an activist, speaker, poet, and practitioner of ancestral healing arts, which she learned apprenticing with the Shipibo tribe in the Amazon rainforest. In 2019, Henna founded Dawn of Peace, a creative community and peace organization. Her activism focuses on educating people about the spiritual reality of life, human and animal rights, medical freedom, and self-sovereignty. In 2021, Henna founded the International Police for Freedom movement, educating police and civilians about our natural rights in order to rehumanize our societies and restore trust between the security forces and the people. She's especially noted for her compelling online videos, which have garnered millions of views, and is also a well-known activist for health freedom as well as for veganism. So it's really delightful to have you with us, and I want to start out by thanking you for all the efforts you've been making over the last year and a half, Henna, and just say that I think that we're seeing, it seems to me anyway, a really challenging time, not only for humanity, but for the vegan movement. So I was wondering, as a longtime vegan and vegan activist, if you could talk a little bit about what you think the implications of all of what we're seeing with the pandemic, how that's affecting the vegan movement in general, and what we can do about it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Will. It's a wonderful opportunity to be a part of this summit. Very important gathering of minds and hearts. That's a really good question. And I would take it back even prior to when this kind of newest crisis began. And I would say already about 4 years ago, I started seeing that the vegan movement was kind of being steered outside of the basic premise of animal liberation and animal rights. And it began more and more be likened to kind of the environmental movement and the climate movement especially. And I started seeing that the conversations were being steered into like politics in terms of carbon footprint. And I was already starting to pick up that the movement was starting to transform. And then as a consequence of this, you know, very strong belief that the world is overpopulated and as a result, I could start seeing that vegans started to adopt the belief that humanity is the problem and that we are the virus here. We are the cancer on Earth. And I started seeing more and more vegans who believe that we should no longer have children and that somehow humanity, just by its nature, is evil. And I started experiencing this kind of like there is some sort of self-hatred in the vegan movement. And so now that this pandemic narrative came, it felt like a perfect extension of that story of humanity is the problem, since now we are seen as diseased, even if we would have no symptoms at all. There's the whole story of the asymptomatic transmission. So it seems to be resonating with a lot of those people who already were feeling that humanity is the problem and that we need to get rid of us. We are destroying the earth, which, of course, undeniably is true on one sense as well. But I never felt that human nature is what we are actually seeing, that it's a distortion, that there's a spiritual illness which has disconnected us from nature. And so I see, sadly, a big division now in our movement, which for me was the wonderful community that would be so easy to connect to wherever I would be in the world. You know, I would go to a local vegan cafe and hey, straight away you have a sister or a brother, and you would feel this deep spiritual affinity, like, wow, we are, you know, we are standing up for the little ones, for our sisters and brothers, the animals. And it would be so easy to start up a conversation and feel belonging and connection. But now we have this big question of the role of the government and the role of the medical industry, which has started to divide us. And some vegans have taken that approach of we are disease-ridden individuals who have to be controlled and isolated at all costs. And others of us are feeling that humanity should have their liberation and freedom just like the animals, and that you cannot coerce any kind of medical interventions on us. Same way like we recognize that the body of the animal is sacred, that the body of the human being is also sacred, and that we should have the right to choose, that we can't be, you know, managed like the cattle, like they are being coerced, they're being forcefully medicated and you know, vaccinated, and now we're seeing same being done to humanity. So there is unfortunately a big division happening, and a lack of dialogue between us, and also breaking apart of the movement in general. Here in Spain, I've been a part of the Anonymous for the Voiceless group in south of Spain, here in Andalusia. And during last year, there were months where there were only two groups in all of Spain. I can't remember how many there were of us, but I think a couple of dozen different groups. And there was just two of us that kept going, because so many people were afraid to go to the streets. And because the government restrictions were getting so severe that there was even peripheral lockdowns where you couldn't go from one town to the next. And because our group of activists come from several different cities, it made it very difficult for us to continue to carry out the message to stand for the animals. So it also had a very practical, you know, very concrete effect on the movement.
So that's really interesting. Thank you for those ideas. And I think just to follow up on that, so what you're saying is that the vegan movement is being, number one, divided by this whole narrative of fear that people, now some vegans are pro, pro-lockdown and masking and getting vaccinated and all those things, because that's what the government says, that's what the pharmaceutical industry says, that's what Bill Gates says, so we got to do that. Other vegans are saying, no, no, no. And so now there's these huge rifts. Beyond that, what you're saying is that there haven't been veg festivals or actions outside. I mean, there's no the momentum that we were building for year after year after year. That's what I actually really resonate with what you're saying, because you know, myself just traveling, I could see the momentum building. We have bigger and bigger veg fests every year, more and more people, more and more vegan restaurants, more and more activism, reaching more and more people. And suddenly with COVID, the whole thing just was like somebody threw a rock and just broke the balloon, and it just kind of crumbled to the ground. And I'm wondering if you could say a little bit maybe about, first of all, are there other ways that the vegan movement might be growing, because the people are realizing that cruelty to animals is a deeper issue here? I mean, that's what I'm trying to spread that message. So maybe the vegan movement can get even stronger eventually through this. But also, why is it that vegans, do you think, who you would think really on the surface of it would be the first ones to question the pharmaceutical narrative and to question the governmental narrative? We know that they're promoting meat, they're promoting dairy, they're promoting all these things. Why would we, so many vegans, suddenly jettison that and become sort of aggressively gullible about all this? Like not only gullible, but aggressively so. Like, you have to absolutely believe and trust the pharmaceutical industry and the government and the doctors on this, even though we never trusted them on anything before. We have to trust them on this. I mean, what's going on here? Can you talk about that at a deeper level?
Yeah. The first question was about whether vegan movement could get stronger as a result of it.
Yeah.
Yes, I do believe that. I think we are like the closest to the truth, you know, in terms of all the other areas of society and life in general, that we have made that connection that all life is sacred, you know, on a fundamental level. But I see there's a few different reasons why, you know, some of us in the vegan movement have closed our eyes from, you know, the truth of what is actually happening now. And one of them I see being a kind of social belonging to a certain group that has become kind of like a genre of an identity, an identification with a social movement, a niche, which is very specific kind of characteristics. So one is this climate, very linked to the climate, I would call it climate hysteria. And another part is against, like, kind of antinatalism, you know, so against birth and procreation of humanity. And feeling on the kind of left spectrum of the political spectrum, and thinking that if you want to speak about freedoms in terms of humans, you must be on the right wing, and that you must be pro-gun and kind of conservative, and that seems to kind of, yeah, be a dissonance from this identity that many people have adopted. So, and I see that that is lacking the spiritual foundation of veganism, which should be beyond all politics and identities like this, and be about just a recognition that all life is sacred, and that we humans are life too, and our life is worth protecting, and our freedom is worth protecting also. But beyond this kind of identity crisis, I think there is also the wounding, deep, deep wounding and unresolved childhood trauma. And then once we get into this fear state, government almost takes like a parental figure in our subconsciousness, and a sense of, you know, we must do as they say, and somehow the small me, you know, that little child, the helpless child inside, feels that they need the protection of something bigger than themselves. So I see, just not just in vegan movement in general, that this is kind of the wounding that is playing out, and the unresolved traumas which keep us in a state of illusion, you know, wanting to protect ourselves from the imminent threat of realizing that actually the government is the factory farm, and we are the cattle that is being brought to slaughter, which is like the crude reality of what I see, what is happening.
And that's, I guess, because the government, in many ways, has been captured by other forces than just our, we get to vote, and we get to choose our representatives, and they're on our side. They're trying to control these evil corporations and these evil banks, not necessarily evil, but they're very, they want to maximize their profits. So we've got our governmental agencies to protect us. They work for us, and we can trust them. I think that kind of goes without saying, underneath what you're saying, is that the government and the corporations are now basically one power, one unit. And the medical and pharmaceutical industry has so much money and so much power. I would maybe just like to hear your take on the other aspect of this, which is within the vegan movement, it seems that we have this one dimension of the vegan movement, which is the vegan doctors, the vegan MDs. And they're kind of revered like gods. I mean, we revere the doctors anyway in our society, like shamans, priests that come and heal us with these remarkable technologies that we can never figure out. And we just run to them whenever we have a runny nose or anything. And I think a lot of vegans don't get over that either, perhaps. But the to me, it seems like the vegan MDs have been notably silent about questioning any of this. They've been, in fact, just the opposite. Many of them are proudly displaying the fact that they've been vaccinated. And it seems to me that this, since vegans look up to these doctors so much, it just kind of sweeps them along with this whole pandemic hysteria, perhaps. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think we have a very distorted idea these days of what a doctor is. I see them very much as kind of licensed drug dealers. And my idea of what a healer should be, someone who teaches you how to heal yourself. So the best healer would really make you, you know, make themselves obsolete and would show you what is the way to true health. But what we have today is the system of dependency. And even just the pharmaceutical industry, what it's based on is of course, animal cruelty. All of these petrochemical substances and all of these drugs, they are tested on animals. And the testings are absolutely gruesome. They're horrendous, what they do. And including the ingredients that goes into these injections. So where do we draw the line morally, especially if we can prove that the science behind, for instance, vaccines is not solid at all, that it's actually doing the opposite of what it claims. It's maiming people, it's harming people, and their innate immunity. So I think it's a question of, yeah, towing the line and not wanting to lose one's followers, when I see that this is actually an amazing opportunity for us to really lead by example and show the way that actually, you know, we can heal ourselves and that nature around us is wise beyond imagination. And we have all the medicines that we need just growing in our own forests and fields. I see the power that we can bring back into the vegan movement is the true reverence of nature. What does that mean in practicality? What does harmony with nature actually look like? And I don't see it's popping petrochemical-based pills that have animal ingredients in them.
Right. So you and I think have a similar background of a really deep distrust of the medical establishment. My father was actually going to be a doctor, and then he was a medic in World War II, and decided all he did was give people vaccinations. He said, I just lined up. I just gave people shots all day. That's all I did was give people shots. And I thought it was just destroying their health. I didn't want to do that anymore. And so he became a journalist. And I think as a journalist, I'm really glad because I learned from journalism that basically whatever's in the media is only there because the advertisers are allowing it. And if you run anything in the media that's not, you know, and the biggest, of course, advertisers are the pharmaceutical, chemical, petrochemical banking interests. So that has helped me so much. But my background mainly has been in what I would call spiritual healing and just relying on consciousness, as well as veganism and a lot of other things. You have a background in some shamanic or at least just native indigenous peoples healing wisdom. I was wondering if you could just share with people a little bit of why you're not worried about getting sick, right, during this pandemic, and what are things that you do and people can do practically in a positive way to maintain vibrant health?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just the basic principle of what I have on my plate is I always try and have the rainbow, the colors of the rainbow. And I've never been a big consumer of supplements. And people ask me, oh, what about B12? And I don't know. I have some fishy like feelings about that. I think that actually God made our bodies so that we have everything we need and that we just need to learn how to maintain our natural health. So I'm a bad consumer of supplements, bad customer of that industry. And I just rely on whole foods as pure as possible because I see that it's, at the end of the day, and this is what the indigenous teach as well, it's all about frequency and vitality. And those two are very linked. So the frequency of the food you're taking in terms of the physical food, the nourishment, very important to have it as close to the original state as possible. And then the diet in the indigenous world is not just what you eat, it's everything. I do the last sentence. Yeah, the diet in terms of the indigenous culture is not just what you eat, but they call diet everything you take in into your consciousness. So the diet is also the books you eat, the books you read, the videos you watch, the music you listen to, the conversations you have, everything that comes in through here. And so when I went through my apprenticeship, that was a period of very rigorous purification of my consciousness and then consequently learning how to maintain that in the modern society and how to balance that. So one big part of my health is that I don't watch any Hollywood or Netflix junk. I don't take in the product of somebody else's sick mind. So I'm very careful with that. I protect the peace of my mind very much. I don't watch violence or any images that are that are disharmonious. I don't watch advertisements. I don't watch news or follow the news media. And I think that is a really huge part of our frequency, what frequency we're living in. And then that is directly linked to our state of creativity and vitality. So that is a big part. And then authenticity. How do we express, our inner worlds? How honest we are with our emotions? Because whatever we leave unsaid, whatever emotion that we don't honor by expressing it, it will turn into a blockage. First energetically, but eventually physically, it will turn into an illness. And where it manifests in the body tells us of what kind of energy it is. So there are certain organs that are specifically related to certain kind of emotions, you know, like liver for anger, for instance, kidneys for fear, all of these different things that many ancient traditions know about. So I find that very important, that when I feel things, that I express it straight away. And it means that this past 2 years, which have been a wild ride for all of us, I've probably cried more than ever before, but it's been my way of cleansing my soul and just, you know, yeah, staying pure, staying human. Because I think at the end of the day, the kind of end goal of where all of this is being steered to, what all of this is headed to, is transhumanism and the attempt to spiritually assassinate us so that we don't have that soul expression, that creative spark anymore, that we become more and more machine-like, more easier controlled and managed, like this kind of soulless workforce, which the fourth industrial revolution is all about. And this whole idea of we are overpopulated, we need to get rid of people, because the nature of the future work is going to be totally different. We're going to need a lot less physical labor, manual labor. So, for me, that's a big part, is protecting our humanity and really expressing it in this time through authenticity.
Right. Wow. That's really well said. So it's a combination of really mindful consumption of food that's organic and whole without coming from factories and toxins, and then seeing that the food is also whatever we're reading and seeing. So no television and movies that are toxic and full of violence and delusion and so forth, and then going to a deeper level and connecting with the vibratory frequency of not only
totally.
The food we're eating, but also not suppressing our emotions and letting our feelings be expressed in a healthy way and creating healthy relationships, I'm sure is a big part of that, because we can't
Absolutely.
Have relationships if we're not being honest.
Yeah, and another part as well is the creativity. This is a big, big core principle in the Shipibo culture, is that if you're not expressing your creative self, you're not fully embodying your true self, your true nature as creator beings. So whatever form that takes, whether it's, you know, in gardening or in painting, in poetry, in dancing, in whatever, sculpting. So
right.
I really just encourage everyone to dedicate a time of your day for that. So expressing, that's your inner child right there. That's the joy that we need to really, yeah, express in this time.
Thanks. That's so important. Yeah, I love every morning and every evening I'm playing the piano, just letting it come. But I think you do too. And people,
yeah.
I think if we don't express our creativity, we're not really being a human being. And I think that pain of that, then we want to numb ourselves. We are naturally attracted to foods that numb us, media that numbs us, alcohol and drugs that numb us, medications that'll numb us. And of course, huge industries get very wealthy on this. And that kind of brings us, I think, kind of naturally into this, finally getting toward the end of our time here, but that question about, you have been very forthcoming in speaking about what you think is really happening on the planet. Now, you started Dawn of Peace, which is a movement to help vegans go deeper and understand what's really going on here. You talked just now about the fourth industrial revolution, which I think a lot of people maybe don't even know what you're referring to, or the Great Reset, or the transhumanist agenda, seeing human beings as commodities to be exploited or harvested or culled. And a lot of people have a hard time even going there, but I think it's becoming pretty obvious that we cannot be gullible about what the agenda is. So can you please enlighten us a little bit about what your research has showed you about this and what you think is actually happening?
Yeah, well, I think one of the key figures to look into is Klaus Schwab and his, like you mentioned, the Great Reset book, the World Economic Forum. And one of the kind of iconic statements that he has made recently is that we need to redefine what it means to be a human biologically. And there have been projects going on already for, I think, a couple of decades already, where they have attempted to create artificial brains. There are scientists working on artificial wombs, microchips, brain Neuralink technologies, embedded technologies. And this has been championed a lot and already in actually some schools, in children's school books, there are exercises of what part of a human would you change if you had artificial intelligence. I actually don't like to use the word intelligence. I think it's intellect. I don't think you can make artificial intelligence. So I see that intelligence is left and brain. Yeah, left and right brain together. You know, it has the generative, creative principle, the gen. So I think it's artificial intellect. But yeah, tasks where they need to figure out how to make a human being into superhuman if you had this available, this technology. And so I'm seeing it coming from every kind of front, this kind of, celebration of the AI, how this is the next step of human evolution. And even having seen Dalai Lama make a public statement about how he promotes the creation of artificial intellect and artificial brains, and that he's interested to see how this will help us comprehend the human consciousness better. But for me, that's a huge shock, because how can you understand human consciousness through a machine? And I don't think it's evolutionary at all. I think it's devolutionary. The more we use these kind of smart gadgets, the more we actually learn not to rely on our own senses, the less our senses actually develop. So another thing that I've learned in the spiritual practice is that all of our senses have a higher dimension to them as well. And all these words that we use, like clairvoyancy or clairsentience, they're not some supernatural skills. They are supernatural in a way that they belong to us. And we all have the potential to cultivate our senses to that dimension that we can actually sense higher realities and receive spiritual guidance through our senses. But because we are constantly connected to this very hostile frequency coming from these smart devices, it's dulling our senses and it's dulling our consciousness and making us more boxed in. And so there's all these plans about the Internet of Things, how every household gadget that we have will be hooked online, and there will be the smart city kind of blueprint that will be created and then replicated everywhere. The social credit system of where each of us will have a profile, and then based on how obedient we are as a citizen, we will receive a certain score. And then based on the score, we will either get to a certain school or not. We will get a driver license or not. We can travel in public transport or not. And this is, of course, already in use in China. And I hear this being celebrated and championed here in the West by many of these kind of characters in Davos and the heads of state. So this is where I see that the COVID has become like a perfect bridge to usher in this kind of new normality, as they say. It's not temporary because it's normality. So it has a sense of permanence that they are bringing in. That they are using now this track and trace technology, and it's all for your own good. And all of this, motion sensor technology, facial recognition cameras, temperature drones. So why would they funnel such huge amounts of money into such a system if it was only for this summer until we get rid of this pandemic? I don't believe that for one second. I see it's a permanent shift in society that they are building with this.
And it's not just about having a refrigerator that'll order some more lettuce when you need it or something like that. I mean, I don't think anybody really is begging for something like that. But to have these powerful, bathing the entire planet in electromagnetic radiation so that we're all tracked 24/7, What does that do to humanity, do you think? What's really going on at a deeper level?
Yeah, I see it as a kind of new generation of slavery. And those of us who are kind of deceived by this idea and think that this is somehow evolutionary, that's kind of the ideal slave of the 21st century, one that is the prisoner and the prison guard of their own life, you know, not even knowing that all of their fundamental freedoms are at stake. And then if we put into this equation the idea of constant monitoring of our carbon footprint, then how do we know what kind of allowance, you know, we will be having? So what if they say, now this week you've used all your carbon quota because your house is totally online and therefore controllable from the outside. We can now shut down your heat. You can no longer warm your house because you already overused your quota or whatever. So I just see it as the most like horrendous expression of tyranny that I can imagine. If every, like, they could even shut down the doors electrically and say you're not allowed to leave your house. Now there's a new lockdown because we need to reduce the carbon emissions. So it's not something that it's not a world that I want to live in. But I got to say, there are some ingenious actions already being taken place. I know in California there's groups that are doing this, and here in Spain, for instance, there are people that are growing grids, not growing, but building grids of cloud busters using this orgone technology. And they create spheres of, can be up to 30 kilometers, where it totally neutralizes the hostile EMF radiation and actually restores natural weather patterns in that area. So I think, you know, when we tap into those sacred technologies, we can counter even this kind of attack.
Wow. Yes. So basically, with Dawn of Peace, you are aware of the negativities that are being apparently rolled out. We can see really by the day. I mean, we've talked to Claire Mann in Australia recently, and when we see how they can't even leave their houses in many cases at all, that there's an agenda that's very similar to what we human beings, how we see cows and pigs and chickens as mere exploitable commodities. There are certain ones who see us that way. And I was kind of shocked the other day to see a pretty prominent vegan activist saying that any vegan who questions the official vaccination and COVID narrative, that vegans should report them to the authorities, so we have vegans, you know, basically reporting on other vegans for questioning the pharmaceutical industry, and that's remarkable to me to see the depths really to which ignorance and fear have taken over the movement. What do you see? Do you think, besides the AI thing, do you think there's any kind of something else in the works, like a depopulation event going on as well? Perhaps.
Mm. Yes, I do see, and based on my research, it looks like this is kind of what they've been doing every 100 years or so to kind of manage the population or cull the herd, you know. So if we do see the government is the factory farm and we are the cash cows, you know, the cattle, then we become a lot, you know, harder to manage and control the more of us there is. So it would make sense if you think of them as farmers in a factory farm, that periodically you have to kind of make sure that your farm doesn't get overpopulated, because then it's too resource heavy for them to keep it going. So quite early on in my kind of spiritual journey, where activism was a huge part of it, I recognized that there is no difference between a factory farm and a government. But some governments are kind of these so-called, you know, fair trade farms or organic farms, where you get a bit better food and a bit more illusory freedom.
Like a free range operation.
Exactly. So you have this illusion of, oh, we are free. But no, I'm seeing it, you know, if you look into the history of what actually happened around the Spanish flu or when the polio outbreak, so-called, took place. This is a big part of what we do in Dawn of Peace. I've kind of made this moral kind of line that we speak the truth, that we don't self-censor, that it's time that there is a peace movement or an organization that is addressing all the different things that are causing enslavement and suffering, whether humans or animals. Right. So we talk a lot about the truth, what is actually going on, to empower us. Because as long as we are enslaved by the lie, then we can never be free. And we can't truly bring that spiritual integrity to our work, even with the animals, if we are consenting to a system of dominance ourselves. If we ourselves are enslaved, then how do we spiritually help, you know, truly? And another interesting thing is the word lie. Drug is an old Slavic and Indo-European word that means lie, drug or drug. And now that is the solution to this pandemic is drugs, you know, the vaccines. Well, as you brilliantly pointed out, the origin of that word as well, the cow, you know, vaccination. So, yes, it's a system that is based on violence. And as soon as we come to realize that, we can start building a whole other harmonious coexistence.
Right. It's based on deception, too. I think violence and deception.
Absolutely.
And so the old root, the old word drug, similar to drogue, means lie or like a falsehood, a deception.
Yes, exactly.
I think, boy, that's really seems true. And the violence involved. I just saw a video the other day of a woman in a hospital. I think it was in Ireland, where the baby, she was pregnant and she was going to give birth in a hospital. And the nurses were saying that as soon as her baby was born, the baby was going to have to be vaccinated with these different things. And the woman was saying, no, I don't want my baby to be vaccinated with these different things. And they explained to her, well, look, as long as the baby's inside of you, it's your property. But as soon as the baby comes out, then it's no longer your property. It's our property. And it's like the same thing on a dairy. You know, it's like I own you. And as soon as you give birth, I own your baby. I'm going to take your baby and do whatever I want. I'll force medicate your baby and kill your baby because that's what it's about. It's a system of violence and exploitation. And I'm wondering what it's going to take, really, for human beings to wake up and realize that that's exactly what's happening with this pandemic here. Do you have any final thoughts? I know we're getting about up to our time, but anything you can say about maybe how we should be responding and how we can stay strong and positive and empowered during this time, I think would be great and healthy.
Yeah, I honestly think I just want to say, like, as vegans, we've already gone through kind of one big trauma of realizing how we've been deceived about animals and how painful that was and the humility that came from that realization, that how we could have been so badly fooled our whole lives and that we had actually actively engaged in such an immoral practice of eating the bodies of these enslaved innocent beings, our little sisters and brothers here. And to remember that, although it was incredibly painful in the beginning, thank God we had that realization, that awakening, and how we forever changed our lives and are so grateful for that. Well, this is just another step. This is the next step. It's coming to see, you know, where we are, that this is a factory farm and that we actually have the ability, unlike the animals, to get out of that. Because it's all based on consent. It's ruled by consent. So the bars that are imprisoning us, they are, you know, illusory. We can actually take ourselves out of that system of dominance and create a beautiful, harmonious world together. So it just takes is that step of courage to see, okay, maybe I've been lied to about other things as well. And just see what, you know, the others are sharing out there. Could it be true? And very soon enough, you'll come to see that there's a tremendous amount of doctors and scientists and virologists and immunologists and lawyers and police that are being censored constantly, that are telling a whole other narrative. And if you just go, you know, follow that line for a bit, verify, is it true? You will come to see it is true. It's all totally verifiable. And then you will be empowered to actually act, because otherwise you'll keep escaping this fear, you know, that is constantly chasing us. And, you know, now it's COVID. What's next? You know, maybe it'll be MERS or some super bug or another variant. Like, it'll never end. We'll just constantly, like, give up our freedoms. And the more we do so, the more deeper we fall into that enslavement. So it's just my invitation to, you know, be courageous and know that we've already done a lot as vegans, and that actually we have what it takes to stand against the grain. We've already done it. We've done it for years, some of us for decades, like you have, and that we really have what it takes, I believe, to be the builders of the new earth.
Wow. Well, thank you. Yes, I think that's really well said. The idea that it's based on our consent and your underlying spiritual training with the indigenous people that helped you realize you're not just a physical piece of matter, that you are consciousness and eternal. And so that's, I think, at least I know that's true for myself. That's the foundation for what appears on the outside to be courage. It's actually just realizing, in many ways, this is a movie, this whole world. I mean, it seems so real, and it is real on a certain level. But consciousness as awareness streaming through each one of us, and also through all living beings, animals, and all beings, actually is creating the appearances that we're having. So instead of being the victim of what's happening, to realize it's our creation and to co-create something beautiful, like you're saying, of harmony. And that's why I think it's so important to bring the vegan message in, because it seems to me, as long as we're sowing the seeds of forced medicating and imprisoning animals, why are we thinking we're not going to have the same thing happen to us? And that's one of the main reasons I wanted to do this summit and have you one of the main speakers, is because most of the so-called truth and freedom movement are people eating animal foods, and they're not making that connection. So it's so critical, I think, that we bring the vegan animal liberation and compassion for all living beings message into everything that we're doing. And you've been such a great example for that. How can people find out more about your work and your videos, your writings, and the Dawn of Peace?
Yeah, so one address is really the main one, hennamaria.community. From there, you'll find all the links to everything basically I've done. So that's like the hub.
Okay, great. All right, well, thank you very much. And we really
appreciate
you participating in the summit. Thank you.